Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. We come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time, and we stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We archive the programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page, and we are also rebroadcast on Sundays at 3 p.m. Pacific Time on a2zen.fm. As is my guest, not at the same time or on the same day, but she is also on a2zen.fm. She is one of the regular hosts on that particular website. And we're going to be talking with our guest here in just a moment. Her name is Nicola Phoenix, and she has a book out called Reclaiming Happiness, 8 Strategies for an Authentic Life and Greater Peace. And isn't that kind of what we're looking for? We're already in the month of November. We're hurtling headlong, maybe head over heels in some instances, towards December 21st, 2012, and the new year of 2013. And a lot of folks are thinking we're not going to make it for whatever reason. I am not one of them. I am one of those who believes that we can keep this thing going as long as we want. And we can keep it going in such a state and in such a way that is supportive and beneficial to all of us, not just a select few. And that is, I think, the way that it was intended to be in the first place. I don't know that for a fact. All I know is that we are looking for those new ways of living. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to do everything I can to find those new ways of living, to learn them, to incorporate them into my life, and help to incorporate them into the lives of the people around me so that they can have the very thing that my guest Nicola Phoenix is talking about. Nicola, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program, and I'm going to just let our listeners in on a little piece of information that it has taken over a month for us to arrange this interview. We have gone back and forth, up and down, sideways, and diagonal to try to set this up, and finally, here we are. The first Saturday of November 2012, and it's a great pleasure to have you on the program all the way from the UK.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I know it's taken so long, and it's just all worth it. So thank you so much, and it's a real pleasure to be here.
I would agree, and I've always believed in everything that I have done that when there is difficulty in making something happen, when it does, it's going to be pretty fantastic, and I'm really looking forward to the next hour with you. Now, you have a whole bunch of letters after your name. Nicola Phoenix, MSc, BSc, CP, AMT, Diphtheriog. Okay, let's start with that. What is Diphtheriog?
So that's yoga. So for the last 20 years, I've been studying yoga and meditation and practicing myself. So I'm just a beginner. They always say the first 12 years you're a beginner. So I think I've just come out of my beginner's hood. Give me another few lifetimes, maybe I'll tell you something. So that's been a part of my life ever since I was in my teens. And all the other letters as, because I'm a psychologist too. So I bring both together, which is why I call myself the spiritual psychologist, because it's about how do we use the East and the West, and there's not one better than the other. We can really use, just like you said right at the beginning of the show, we can use everything to help us. Let's use it all and help each other.
I think that one of the things that we are sort of at a loss for in this country in particular, but in a lot of circles, especially when we start watching and hearing the various stories coming out of the various countries of the world, primarily the governments and the institutions, is that there are a lot of people who have lost touch with what it means to be happy, to be joyful. I was seeing a television program, a news program last week, that was focusing on a gentleman who was working for one of the major financial institutions. And basically, he enjoyed what he was doing. He did not deny that. But when he began to see things happening that were not really ethical, were not appropriate in terms of the way that the company and its higher-ups treated their customers, their clients, the people who paid them the money. They treated them as if they referred to them as puppets. He said, no, this is ridiculous. This is not right. You don't treat your customers this way. You don't treat your clients this way. You don't treat other human beings this way. And he quit. Only he did it in a very unique way. He took out a New York Times ad, an editorial, to explain why he was leaving, you know. And I thought, I wonder how many of these people in the financial industry are unhappy. I mean, and that's just one area.
It's so interesting what you say, and maybe I'll break it down. And whenever I'm teaching and helping people, I'm real simple myself, so I keep it very simple. And if we think about it this way, there's an inner purpose and an outer purpose. And our outer purpose is the expression of our inner purpose. But quite often, and you said it so right, you know, we see it in the media, in the government, we are so caught up on our outer expression. So things like, am I a success? How much money am I earning? What have I achieved? So it's that outer, what am I doing? Is my family doing the best they can do? It's outer, outer, outer. And sometimes we strive and strive and strive to be at the top because this outer expression is all we're looking at. But just take a minute and go back to the inner purpose where we really connect within ourselves. And we go back to, well, what do I feel I was put here to do? What's actually going to make me feel good? Am I in touch with the soul that I really am and the connection I have with other people? So if you look at what's happened in society, and I think you're so right, this day more than ever, we're seeing outer purpose, power, money, struggles, people literally striving to get these, but no actual look at, well, what about my inner purpose? And as that wonderful man you described before got to the point where it's like, hold on a second, if I go within myself, this doesn't fulfill me. There has to be a moment where we go within and start looking within ourselves. And that's when we start tapping upon feelings of real joy or peace or contentment or even ease. It doesn't have to be something the happiest day in the world. But if we're only looking for it outside, then we're in this constant struggle of win, lose. Have I got it? Have I not got it? Am I the most successful? Where is the peace in that?
I know that we are talking more and more on this program along all of these lines, and that the institutions and the systems, the paradigms, the old ones that have been around, quite honestly, for centuries, people are I've made the comment on this program before that I know people who are, my dad's 81 years old. I can only imagine if he were to open up and share with me, I can only imagine how tired he is of the treadmill, of feeding the machine, as it's been called. I'm only 52. I've barely been here a half century. I'm already tired. And I just had, I am now a great uncle just within the last couple of months. And I'm sitting here thinking, and what are her prospects? Yeah. What are her, is the purpose of her being here to do nothing more than run the treadmill and feed the machine? Is that
it's
really
so
what,
funny.
Yeah, is that what we were created for?
I think you're so right. And to put it in context, I'm actually pregnant at the moment.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. So these are really important questions. So me and you are on exactly the same wavelength because these are the questions of me looking at this lovely bump growing and saying to myself, you know, you are whole already and you are complete already. So it's not up to me to start prescribing success for you. Just the fact that you've showed up is enough. It's like, that's enough, you know. And do we push these young, beautiful souls into a life, as you say, of struggle, of jumping onto the hamster's wheel, going round and round, and then getting to a point and saying, I'm not happy? Or do we help to nourish them from the word go and say, you are whole now, go within, what do you want to do? What do you want to contribute? What's right for you? And that's being very conscious without our own egos jumping in. So without me saying, this child has to go to university or this child has to do that, it's about how do I become conscious enough within myself to say, that doesn't actually mean success. That's maybe outer success, but that's not peace necessarily. So how do we as a generation use what we've learned and all the things that we did, which was, and I've done the same, you know, with my career of struggle and push to get to the point where I realized I didn't need to do any of that. I just needed to really find something I loved.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel we have such a responsibility to help ourselves become conscious. And together, by being more conscious, we attract more conscious people. We attract people living in more conscious ways. And we can change quite dramatically how we are living on this planet. No, not everybody, and I'm certainly not out to try and preach to people or convince people of anything. The best way that I always think in life is just show by example. If I want to see this planet in a loving way, can't I just go out and give love to somebody?
Mm-hmm.
If I want to show this planet in a way where I don't have to strive for more and more and more and more, can I just be that within myself? And I think if we can start to go within ourselves, that's the best example we can set for anybody around us to actually look at. And that's how we learn. Of course, we look and we see and we go, ah, that's possible. And then anything can happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Matter of fact, your first chapter kind of addresses that misunderstanding our true divine nature, which goes to my comment about what we were created for. And all of the ancient wisdom teachings I have read don't say anything about being a consumer producer, that we are divine, that we were created, as is said in the Bible, we were created for greater works than even Jesus did. And I wonder how many of us are really doing that.
Well, today I was on my way to work and I was reading a book about wholeness. And it said something very interesting. It said, when we call it perfection, our ego jumps in, which is very true. So wholeness says, I am already complete. And that's why I say, and when I'm writing in my book, it was very much, you are complete now.
Mm-hmm.
Stop striving to be extra special or extra more, because you really are there. So in a way, you're pushing against something that's already a truth. And it's, we are fed so many messages, as we all know, in our life, not just by primary caregivers, our parents or our teachers, the media, our peers, where we have to be more than what we are to be good enough. So in order to be good enough, I have to earn a salary above this. To be good enough, I have to be seen to have my own house, which I don't have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's things
right.
like this. And so we've fed this message that we've completely misunderstood the soul we are, and that going within connects us there, and we go, hold on a second, those messages that I'm being fed are absolute nonsense. Those messages that I'm being fed, which I call an endless struggle, because the truth is you'll never get to the point where you've got enough.
Yeah.
So you might as well look within and say, hold on a sec, if I'm enough within myself, what more, how much more do I really need to be happy?
Yeah. You know, your definition of the word perfect, I found back about 20, 25 years ago when I was doing my own word search specifically in the Bible, and I came across that passage, be perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. And as I began to research that, I couldn't find anything in that definition that spoke to right, wrong, good, bad, up, down, light, dark. It was basically came right down to the very word you used, complete. We are complete. That is the perfection that is being spoken of.
It's amazing, because if you look at, and I'm, you know, both of us are very aware, I don't have a television, and it's quite a conscious choice not to have one.
Congratulations, by the way.
Yes. And when I go to the movies, which isn't very often, and I only remember I don't go to the movies when I walk by somewhere and I go, oh yeah, I haven't seen a movie for ages. And when we go, me and my husband always laugh, and I always give him a nudge and I say, isn't it funny watching adverts? Because it's a real novelty. And you watch the adverts, and when you haven't seen for a long time, they make you laugh.
Yes.
Because you realize every advert is saying, and we could put a big umbrella term, You're not allowed to get old. You're not allowed to drive an old NASCAR. It has to be one of those new ones. You absolutely must use the shampoo that everybody else uses who's very rich and successful, or you won't be rich and successful like them. Mm-hmm. And it really makes you laugh because you realize, hold on a second, we are setting ourselves up for failure, quite literally, because we'll look at someone and we'll say, well, I haven't got what they've got. So I'm not as good as them, therefore I'm not good enough. So I'll spend my life struggling to have something that I'm never going to get. But the second that we look within and we say, hold on a second, if I'm a soul and they're a soul, why am I separating myself from them so much, making them so much better than me for not having a wrinkle on their around their eyes or driving a Golf or something?
Mm-hmm.
So when we separate ourselves from other people, we feel terrible about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We start associating with the roles that they play. So I might say, wow, look at this lawyer from Amnesty International. They're doing so much good. I don't do that much good. I'm not good enough. And then I feel bad about myself. Or I could separate myself by saying, look at that person living on the street. They don't have a home. I'm better than them. It's amazing. We can separate ourselves from other people. But the second that we look at someone else and we acknowledge, hold on a second, I don't need to strive to be like you, because the wholeness within me is within you too. So what a silly struggle that I'm trying to do to be better than you, when that's impossible, because we're actually essentially the same.
Mm-hmm.
We are both whole and complete right now. And it takes the struggle out of life. And I think by taking the struggle out, we feel better. We don't have as much anxiety, as much tension, as much worry. If you listen to normal speech with people, it fascinates me. People use the word worry. Oh, I was worrying about this. And I always say, well, you don't have to worry about it. Just think about it if you want to.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I was sitting here actually hearing the words that you were saying, and I was going to respond with the phrase, well, Nicola, that's a big challenge for most of us, and we think about doing that, thinking about the other person as just like us and so forth, but it's really, really hard. And even as those thoughts were formulating in my mind, I began to sort of realize from what you were saying that when we then start to verbalize those kinds of thoughts, well, then it does become hard.
Yes.
But it doesn't have to be.
You know, it doesn't matter. I've worked as a psychologist. I spent 15 years working with clients, and I would always say the same thing. And I'm a big loving person, so it all comes from love and compassion. And I would always say, and people come in and they say, this happened. I know it sounds silly. And I always stop them. I say, no, if it's important to you, it's important. Never downplay what you've been through. So we all have different journeys of learning all of this. Of course we do. And yes, sometimes, as we both know, some of those lessons in life can really feel like a kick in the backside at times. So there are moments that are challenging completely where we have to learn to pull ourselves away from sitting in the thoughts, which is it's easier for everyone else than it is for me.
Mm.
And I think everyone, myself completely included, have had times in my life when I've been so challenged by illness and all sorts of things where you've looked at someone who appears to be healthy and you think, oh, it's okay for them. And it's that mindset that holds you where you are. So I know exactly with everyone I work with, it's the same. That's why I say I'm never preaching. It's really saying I know what it feels like to sit there and be suffering, but I also know what it feels like to pull myself out of it.
Yeah.
And I also know what it feels like to put myself back in it again. So, there's no bit of me making this unreal. It's just saying, through commitment and persistence, it's amazing what we can actually achieve.
And this also ties in very well to the whole aspect of personal power. And one of the things that I have shared with people, and I tell them, you realize that for you to discriminate over the people that you associate with is perfectly appropriate. We do it all the time. And if you want to surround yourself with people who are going to support you in your dreams and your hopes and your aspirations, then you can discriminate and have those people around you. And if you want to have people who are going to hold you down and beat you up and tell you how terrible, oh, that was awful what you thought and so forth, you can do the same there. It's your choice. But we have that freedom of discrimination. And quite honestly, we do it all the time anyway.
I mean, I agree with you completely. I remember when I was working for someone, and I worked with them for a long time, and I had a lot of respect for them and really admired them. You know, when you really look up to someone, you think, oh, if only I could be like that. And you know, this was a long time ago, and when I decided that the way I felt I wanted to work was not in that way, so I would leave. And I remember somebody saying to me, you won't make a success of this. And you can imagine, my first response was, oh, God, I think, you know, when your heart sinks into your guts and you think, oh, well, if they don't think I can do it, how am I going to do it? And I let myself sink down and feel that, okay, maybe they're right, briefly. And then I thought, hold on a second, I'm going to do this. And I didn't say that to prove them wrong, because they haven't got a clue where I am, what I'm doing now. Anyway, it doesn't make any difference. It was just for me to know, hold on a second, doesn't it show you that being in that environment was symptomatic of you not making the changes you wanted to do? And the second you moved away, yes, sometimes you get a little lesson where you have to look and go, you know what, they were wrong. But also, the people that I then started surrounding myself with were very much, yes, people, yes, you can do this. Yes, what do you need me to do to help you to do this? Mm-hmm. And it was a really important time in my life where I had to see that it was the people around me that I was choosing. And there is no hard feelings. I never come to this as, oh, I was badly treated. Not at all. It was just me learning exactly what you said, which is we have a choice. And if I choose to put myself around people who are going to constantly be moaning about everything being wrong with everything, including themselves, then they're not going to feel good. And then what am I going to do? Sit there and try and convince them they're good enough? No, I'm not at work 24/7 and it's not my job. It's, can I just choose to be around people where I feel good? Because it's like dominoes, isn't it? It's like the knock-on effect of me feeling good means I feel good within myself, my thoughts will change, the feelings in my body will change, what I give changes, and instead of becoming insular with that rat race kind of mentality of survival because we're all not good enough, I open up and I blossom. So the people we're around really have the most profound effect. What energy do I actually want to be around?
Yeah. Yeah, that's, you know, we're going to continue talking more about this as we go on with our conversation with Nicola Phoenix. She has a book called, the title is Reclaiming Happiness, 8 Strategies for an Authentic Life and Greater Peace, especially if you're fed up with self-help books that promise the earth, the moon, and the stars and then don't deliver, and basically wearied by their attitude that weigh you down with how wounded and damaged you are. And what if there was a self-help book that said, we are already healthy and complete? It's what Nicola has been sharing with us, and we're going to continue our conversation in just a moment. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're talking with Nicola Phoenix, and all the way from the UK. It's great to have you on the program. Actually, you're joined by one other who can't speak for itself just yet, but soon will, I'm sure. And we're very happy to have you on the program to talk about all of this. And you have basically each of these chapters where you talk about basically the 8 strategies refers to the misunderstandings about personal power, the misunderstandings about our true divine nature, about safety, stability, and illusion. And when I saw that, one of the first things that came to mind was that My wife and I kind of went through an experience back in late August where an event occurred, a very significant event, that said to us that life is really uncertain. It's really unstable. We just don't know what's coming. And that was the passing of my wife's dog. And it was, to say the very least, extremely traumatic, both for her and for me. And of course, we're still working through that. But I think that's one of the misunderstandings that I even live with, because I am looking for that stability. I'm looking for not just the structure. The structure can always be there, no matter how unstable things are. But the reality is that nothing is stable. Things are constantly in motion. And we never know from day to day what's going to happen. We know what we'd like to have happen from day to day. And I think you would probably agree that it usually doesn't go that way.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, you know, why I call them misunderstandings. I've worked with people and myself for such a long time, and I was quite fed up with being constantly told, you know, this is wrong, this is the right way, this is the road to do it. When actually, sometimes all we've done is we've got something going around in our head and we've believed it to be true to the point where when it gets shattered, we think we're wrong. And it's not, sometimes we've just sort of misunderstood this journey a little bit. As you say, you know, we can misunderstand stability in our lives so much. And there's I love this story, and it's something that I've taken with me a lot, which is feeling secure at home. Because when I was brought up, there was lots of feelings of not feeling safe and not being safe, so lots of fear. And I travel a lot with work, and I heard Ramdas say a story, which was how he was traveling. This was a very long time ago, and he went to a hotel room. And he got in and he was really fed up because he thought, all I want to do is be at home. So he had a laugh at himself and he walked out the door and he stood in the hallway and he composed himself and he flung the door open again and he went, hi, I'm home. Because he said, if I can't be at home in this universe, where can I be at home? Mm. And this always struck with me. So when I was traveling a lot with work and I thought, oh, I'm not sure if I feel very comfortable with this. And this was a long time ago and I'd heard this story and I would do the same thing. I would stand in the hallway and I'd just be like, you know, laughing, pretending someone was in my room, which besides my husband would have been no one. and I would literally laugh and go, hi, honey, I'm home. And it was literally that I'd misunderstood that there had to be something to feel safe. Mm-hmm. Or to feel secure, or to feel that I didn't have to worry. And the second I got that I just misunderstood it, the fears went away because I realized, where do I expect to feel safe? How do I expect to feel safe? And it was just a story that I'd heard that I really took with me, and it changed how I felt because I was hooked on to, as you say, everything will be okay if it's this way. You know, mm-hmm. Everything will be okay if it's a nice hotel. Everything will be okay, you know, if it's really quiet and I get a good night's sleep. But that wasn't always life. So by acknowledging, okay, I think I just misunderstood that. I'd put these restrictions on what my journey of life had to be like. I lightened the load and I started laughing at myself and doing all sorts of funny things, like literally going, hi, honey, I'm home, and treating this universe as my home rather than it had to be a specific way for me to feel good in it.
Well, I think that one of the things that I'm going to consciously work on, and that is that I'm going to be at home no matter how things change, because they will. I mean, that is just the nature of the universe, and that's where I live, in the universe. And yeah. and just try to better accept that fact, and the fact is that people and animals come and go in our lives, and that is the natural order of things. That is the way the universe works, you know, in this particular dimension. And it's going to be a challenge, but I think that in the long run, if we can all work at doing that, and especially with the changes that we see happening around the world today. I mean, you know, we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow economically or socially, you know, religiously and so on and so forth with all of these different institutions. We have no clue. And yet there are some of us who would like to see something different because things aren't really working really well right now. And it's really funny when you think about that. On the one hand, we want things to change. But when you start getting into the nuts and bolts of the process of change, I bet you we're going to struggle a little bit. In spite of the fact that we know we don't like things the way they are, then guess what? That means things have to change.
Well, it goes back to at the beginning when I was talking about inner purpose and outer purpose, because if we start to struggle against everything outside of ourselves and we never turn our awareness within and really look within, then we're struggling and we're making it really hard for ourselves. But if we go within and look at this inner purpose, this, well, what was I put here to do? How can I contribute? How can I give love? How can I give support? You know, how can I care for animals? How can I care for other people? How can I grow food? It doesn't matter what we do. We're all contributing. We make a lovely part of this big jigsaw puzzle. And if we go to our inner purpose and do what we feel is our contribution, we find we struggle less. So when I first started a long time ago with my career, and I'm always very honest, I say to people, you know, when people say, oh, I'm not a therapist to help myself, or, you know, it's just other people or this and that. When I first started, I needed to help people because I didn't feel good about myself. And I don't mind saying that because I think it's refreshing for people to hear the honesty. Mm-hmm. And it took me a long time before I could just help people and give love, and it didn't matter whether I ever saw them again or anything, because that was my journey. And what I learned by moving right away from all my own stuff and just helping was the contribution I felt I was giving to make change was then, and this is the important word, it was enough. So I stopped struggling against so much because I thought, hold on a sec, you're doing this from a very pure place. It wasn't always that way, which is why I give people the real truth of me so they can see it's okay to be the truth of themselves, which mm-hmm. is, yeah, when I first started, I was just like, oh, wow, I've sorted that person out or whatever. Absolute rubbish. That was just feeding my own ego because I didn't feel good enough. So when we go within, and it doesn't matter what we do, it doesn't matter whether you're an accountant helping businesses, doesn't matter at all what we do, if it's right for us and we feel we're making that contribution, we will feel a lot more ease about what's happening in the world because we know that we're doing something rather than just sitting there and only focusing on, well, what is wrong and how can I change this wrong. Go within and ask yourself, well, what do I feel I was put here to do? How can I do it? And if we can really do that, that changes the world as a whole. And little by little it happens, and I know it's very easy to read a newspaper and pick it up and say, oh my God, everything's terrible. But equally, if we stopped reading that newspaper for a week, we'd start opening our eyes to smiling at people on the train or to seeing the flowers. And then when we met the next person, instead of picking up that same, oh my God, the world is a terrible place, we might even talk about different things. That's a contribution to change in itself. So do I stay with the mediocre struggle? And it's not that I'm ignorant. I know what's happening in the world. But I consciously choose to make a contribution for the better rather than get caught up in the struggle that it's never going to change.
Do you see any difference between the peoples of Europe and the other side of the world, as it were, and here in the West, in the United States, in terms of, I mean, if we're all the same, then I would conclude that probably there is no real difference, that challenges are challenges. It doesn't matter where you live, it doesn't matter what you're going through, and it doesn't matter whether your life is on the line or not. On the inside, it's all the same, is it?
I think that outside circumstances completely vary. I mean, if we looked at, imagine how my life is now to me living in the middle of a war zone, of course the challenges would just be completely different. So the outside expression, of course, is just dramatically different for us all.
Mm-hmm.
So I never discount that. You know, I meet people who have come from horrific situations, and as you said, with the grief process, you know, you have to work with people in a really loving way to get them to understand they're safe now. So because of the different situations, the lessons or what we have to learn in order to feel better are different. Yet by going within ourselves, even if we can just close our eyes and have five deep breaths and find just a moment of calmness or a moment of ease or a moment away from anxiety, whatever it is for us, we will find that that same connection exists within us all. So we can choose to constantly be in the past or the future, but if we just let ourselves be present for one moment and just be with that, we will feel a connection that is very different from the constant battles of our outside world. And I'm not saying that's easy, and I'm not saying being in a war zone and stuff, you could just sit and go, oh, I'll just sit here and meditate while there's gunfire. Of course not. But that doesn't discredit that we still are all whole within, so we can still find a connection at times.
One of the things that has perplexed me over the years is my perception of individuals who transition in as individuals and in large numbers, and primarily those who are distant from me. Obviously, I don't know them. I hear them. I hear that X number of people died in this situation, that situation, the other situation. And I think about the way in which people might pass who are closer to me, and I've had a couple of people who have had that happen, and you know, we have the ceremony, you know, you have the memorial and the funeral and what have you. A lot of people now refer to it as a celebration of life, which is rather a wonderful change. But I think that one of the things that always has struck me is how unceremoniously and almost insignificantly hundreds of thousands of people just disappear from the planet in that fashion, you know, in these various fashions, under whether it's a war zone or otherwise. And that's not to say that siblings or parents or children don't miss them, and you know, they may have these connections, but it just seems as though, my gosh, you know, was there even a moment taken to think about or say something about this person and remember that this person was connected to us? I don't know. I don't know. I'm not exactly sure where all of this came from, but it was something that I thought that just came to me. It just seems as though this process just goes on and on. Or have we made too much of that transition? Have we made too much of the need to have some kind of remembrance, some kind of ceremony, or in terms of tradition and ritual? Have we made too much of it? We've created too much of an attachment structure around the transitioning?
I think both. You know, when I found out I was pregnant, somebody who was really pivotal in helping me and my book passed. And this all happened within the space of about a week. So I was really, had my eyes open. I always like to think, you know, like when somebody's cleaned your eyeballs and you see something very differently. And it was a real moment where I kind of went, there's a soul and there's a soul gone. Whoa. And I'm not telling you from a point of view that I've always got this, but it was quite an intense moment for me, actually really sitting there and going, there's a new one here, and I love this one, and there's one that I deeply loved again who has just gone, and they were sick for a long time, and I didn't know because I literally found out a week after, you know, from family. And it was such a big time for me, and in my book I write about this, and when I was younger I had somebody very close to me pass, and then 2 years later, someone else young pass. And I couldn't get it in my head. And what I got was this. I got old people can pass. That's all right, you know, as you do when you're younger. This is okay. But when it was someone my own age, I have to tell you, it rocked my world completely. So I had to really learn a lot about this process of death. And that's when I started reading and studying Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's work, which was supportive and wonderful and life-changing for me. And you mentioned something really important, which was ritual and attachment. Because we are so attached to each other, and the rituals that we feel we have to make in order to let someone go has complicated the process of passing in a way. Because if we look at the simplicity of it, it's something beautiful, where somebody reconnects with spirit, or however you want to term it, doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You know, we all find our own words. But we're human beings, we're not robots. And nor should we be treated ourselves or each other as robots. And when grief comes along, it's still something that we as emotional beings, have to still process. We can't just throw it out. So we can... I always think we can get something intellectually. I get this person who's back with spirit. I get this person who's completely connected. But I'm not a robot. And I sat, and when I heard the news of this beautiful woman passing, I had a good old cry. Mm-hmm. Instantly. The tears just came. And it was really important I did that, because I wasn't crying, and maybe this is the important point. I wasn't crying that they had gone back to spirit. I was crying because the person that I dearly loved, for all the reasons of the smiles and the laughter and the jokes, I would quite literally just miss so much, because I was so used to having them in my life and bouncing ideas off them, and they were a real joyous soul. So maybe we have complicated everything by grouping it all together as a big loss, when in fact we might just be missing the person and what we gain from that. And I don't think that's something to discount when we're talking about grief. I think it's something that we have to accept. We are emotional beings. There will be emotions. And if I deny those emotions, I'm going to feel shockingly terrible.
And yet, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, the only process that helped me understand that, and it wasn't just the fact that I just found out I'm pregnant, was really letting myself get upset, like allowing myself, it's okay, I'm going to have a really good cry, and I'm going to cry for all the reasons that I need to cry about. And once I'd done that, I found myself a lot more present and better to deal with the actual situation of them passing.
Mm. I've had two experiences in my life where, one as a child, my grandmother passed, and I was actually nearly removed from the church because I was being so upset about the passing of my grandmother. And then the other was as an adult, and a dear friend of mine passed away. And I remember laying in bed that afternoon, it was like the Saturday after, and crying and actually yelling out in anger. I was so mad that he had left. But both of these instances also speak to the level of, and maybe the wrong word, attachment may be the wrong word. Maybe it's the level of connection that I had with these two individuals was the reason why I felt the way that I did, or why we feel the way that we do when we have the grieving.
And I agree with you completely, and this is why I always say, I do say to people a lot, people always apologize for being upset, and especially if they meet me or they're grieving, and I always say to them, we're not robots, which I do literally say in my speech every day, because people come in, you know, and I'm grieving and I want to grieve, but I don't know how to do it, and I'm sorry. And it's like, you know what? What you said was perfect. And this is what I was explaining. When this beautiful soul that I love so much passed, I had to grieve because the connection, and you're not it's not the loss of the physical body, it's the loss of that connection. And we are used to having it around us. Like, as you said, with a grandmother, I mean, the connection that you had, of course there is going to be that, oh my goodness, they're not here, which is why the first stage is always disbelief.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that, you know, people often come in, and this happens a lot with divorce or if partners have had affairs, and people come in and they say, I listen to their speech and they always say, I just can't believe they're not here anymore.
Yeah.
And that's as clear and simple as it gets. We go through disbelief, and that's a really important place to be, because to move to belief means you have to accept something. And there is no time scale that's right on that. There is no time scale. We're with a lot of people going through all different grieving, and it's really important that we hear that. So when it comes to the grieving process, there's no handbook. You know, yeah, there are stages we know we've got to get through. But my goodness, if 5 years down the line you walk by something and you just end up having a well of emotion and you have to cry, we'll go for it, because that's what is working through the layers. And the more work we do on ourselves, the more work we go within and we look at ourselves. My teacher loves the term, and I love it too. It stirs up the mud a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are meditating and all of a sudden something that you happened or a loss from a long time ago comes up, maybe you've just stirred up the mud a little bit. So it's not there's no finale. There's no, I've grieved, it's over, I'm done. The more you work and the more you become aware, then, yes, there are moments of clarity. Yes, there are moments of joy. But also, yes, there might be other emotions that come up. But the important thing, and this is really important, is know that they will pass as well. So what comes up is not overwhelming. You can deal with it. You can cope with it, and it will pass. So there's no need to worry about pushing it down or denying it or feeling it's wrong, because we're very good at doing that. And this is why when I was writing the book, it's a very nurturing book, so people can really hear the message, which is you've not done anything wrong by being you. You're whole now, and that's okay to do what you've got to do, but just don't forget that you are whole now. But there's nothing wrong with grieving. There is, you know, there's nothing wrong with working through what you've got to work through.
And that's also the working through the grieving or the sadness or the anger or the frustration or even the fear. That is part of reclaiming one's happiness?
I think completely. You know, when I was young and this beautiful individual, he was very close to me and he passed. And I remember, and I'll tell you what I said out loud, because it sounds so horrific, but it's quite funny if you look at it. And I remember saying to my dad at the time, because I couldn't get it in my head what had happened, and I said, do you know what? I can think of 10 other people that I wish would have gone except for him. And now it makes me giggle that I said that. But at the time, it was really I was so angry. And why can I, have I got to the stage where I can giggle about it now? Because as soon as the anger went, it gave rise to something else. So when we are reclaiming a connection with our real self, with the real soul that we are, with the real purpose we've got, with real feelings of satisfaction, contentment and ease, not just I'm buying something so I'm going to feel good and feel happy for 5 minutes, we get back to our true self again. So the journey we're on, doesn't matter if we're going through grief, it doesn't matter if we're going through a really tough time, if we are conscious enough, we are always working back towards feeling better, knowing that what we're going through will pass. So it's not that, oh, it was a long time ago, I'm not grieving anymore, that's why I can have a giggle about it. It really is because I went inward and learned more about myself and learned more about the soul that I am and the journey I'm on, which really has brought so much more ease into my life than there was. Because if I think back then, there was a lot of anxiety, a lot. And then I think how I am now, the ease comes and the happiness comes and the joy comes from actually being present and actually being connected and being really in touch with what's happening now. So even if something really challenging is happening, I don't lose the connection. I don't let my mind wander off into horrific what if. And if it does wander off, because thoughts will always arise, I learn to pull it back and say, Nicola, you know what, it's okay. Deal with what's happening now, not what's happening in your fantasy of your head. And as soon as I start doing that, I feel better again. So it's through learning that we do this, you know. There's no time scale and there's no perfect life and there's no right life and there is certainly no right way to learn about yourself. Look how many different and diverse routes there are. Nobody's right. Just find what works for you. That's really the key.
I've always found that, and that's a great statement, because I've always found that fascinating. When I have, when I finally began to process some of the messages that I was getting in the early part of my broadcasting career, I worked for a Christian radio station, and I tell people, I said, it's the best education I was ever paid for. And I began to realize that there was something wrong with what I was being told, because when it comes to food, for example, there are millions and millions of choices that one can make as far as sustaining one's life and the various flavors to savor and on and on and on. And then, you know, as I grew as a child and started going to school, you know, I was told, you know, get a good, well-rounded education to figure out what you want to do with your life, you know, and that there were so many different directions that one could go. And then when it came to relationships, both intimate and not so intimate, that there were, you know, well, there are now 7 billion people on the planet that, you know, you can maybe have a relationship with through social networking and so forth. But then when it came to spirituality, I was told, oh, and there's only one way to that. There's only one way to God. And I thought, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense. That's illogical. Granted, it's all going to, so to speak, you know, I do tend to agree that it all is sort of leading all to the same place. But what difference does it make how you get there?
Oh, it's so true. You know, I'm going to give you the simplest example in the world. My dad is a real, he's a cool cat, he's a great man, and he has always loved martial arts, and he's really into Tai Chi. He does it every day, and that's his thing, and he's Tai Chi, and when I watch him do Tai Chi, and he wouldn't mind me saying it, you wouldn't look at my dad walking around down the road going, this is the most graceful man, but when I watch him practice, my goodness, put those ballerinas out the way and get him on the stage, it's beautiful. But for me, from when I was in my teens, couldn't have interested me less. Yoga postures, yoga breathing, meditation in a different way. So we are come from the same family in terms of his influence was there. But when I went within and found what was right for me, it was completely different to that. And we have a giggle over this because he's taught me some Tai Chi stuff and I've taught him some yoga. And even though we both appreciate the love of moving differently, it doesn't resonate with either of us.
Yeah.
That's really... That's like the most basic example I could ever give you, which is we both find the same place by doing something very different. So when we start looking within, and this is why I constantly say this, go within. What book is right for you? What music is right for you? What town is right for you to live in? What course is right for you to study? You know, me and you could study the same course at two different universities and come out with the same thing, or we could sit next to each other on the same course and come out with completely different careers.
Mm-hmm.
So when you let the expression of your life resonate with you, with what's really right for you, it doesn't matter the path that you take. Because as you say, we're all heading to that same place. You know, consciously, we're not all sitting here going, I really want to be miserable. Consciously, we're saying, I want to feel a little bit better. So find what's best for you. You know, look at meditation. My goodness, we are so lucky that we could find, if we went onto Google now and did a little experiment, I bet we could find 30 different meditation schools at the drop of a hat. Different disciplines. We've got the Buddhist, we've got the yoga, we've got the tantric, we've got this, we've got that. So if you are willing to go within and listen to your own intuition and say, which one's right for me, and move away from all the voices in your head of all the other people that say, oh no, you can't do this one, you'll find that your pathway works for you and you feel a hell of a lot happier doing it. But if all the other influences are tarnishing what you want to do, you're going to feel completely moulded and morphed into something that you're not. So no right way. Never is one right way. I know lots of people will tell you that, but find your right way.
Would you say that if one were to go within and listen to the still small voice, that from your experience doing so, you can trust that if you follow the promptings of your still small voice, it will never hurt you?
It depends what hurt is. We live in a world, and maybe this is a good misunderstanding, where we are always trying to run away from feeling pain, if that makes sense. And when the pain comes, we are always striving not to feel pain anymore. So when we look at the journey of life saying there are going to be moments where we are going to feel different things, and to know that we're not living a life constantly trying to be like, I'm trying to move away from pain and avoid suffering, and to the point where it's such a big deal, we start to see, do you know what, there are times in my life, in, you know, with my husband, there are times in our lives where we niggle, we use the word like niggle, you know, when you just sort of, and it's not that you don't love that person, but you're working through your own stuff, and sometimes you just, you rub up against each other, meant in the nice personal development way. And so if we're going into relationships from that perspective, then does it matter so much if we're knowing that we're not just going into life to avoid hurt? Because it's a really big thing. If you look at our mindsets and you talk to people, there's such an aversion of not wanting to be hurt, not wanting to feel suffering, to such a point that we cause ourselves more anxiety in the long run. So that might have diverted off a little bit from your question, but it's such an important point for us to consider. Are we living this life, living the richness of life, or are we living this life just not wanting to be hurt? And therefore, if you go within and you listen to what's happening within, I'll give you, again, another real example. I met my husband and we got married after knowing each other a matter of weeks, which was a decade ago. And at the time, that voice could have convinced me out of lots of things, but the stillness within said, do it. So it doesn't mean over those 10 years we haven't had any rows, and it doesn't mean over those 10 years we haven't, you know, I've put the fish in the freezer and he wanted it in the fridge and why did I do that, and, you know, all the usual stuff, all the important stuff, of course.
Yes.
So when I went into it, I didn't go in saying it feels right, therefore I'm not going to argue with this person or we're not going to learn from each other. There have been moments of what you might want to call hurt or upset or niggling or argument. Not very many, luckily, but of course there have. We're real people.
Sure.
But so it depends. Are we listening to the still voice saying it can only be good, or are we listening to the still voice saying, is it right for me? And they're two really important distinctions.
All right, then let me rephrase the question. Can we, without hesitation, trust that still small voice? And if we follow the promptings, that we can trust those promptings?
Yes, an absolute yes. Because if that still voice is the still voice and not caught up in the noisy voice, if you know what I mean.
Right. I hear it also referred to as the monkey voice or monkey mind.
Oh, I like that.
Yes.
Yeah. So if it is the still voice we're listening to, and let's go back to that idea of wholeness and the idea of complete the soul that we are, that's what we're tapping into. So the monkey voice, I love that, is going to be very noisy and chattering around saying, no, you can't, you're not good enough, oh no, this isn't right for you, you'll only get hurt. But when you move back to that point and you're with it, and I'm not the being having a few deep breaths is the only way, but imagine just tuning in and calming and breathing and being present, and let that still voice come up, or that feeling in your heart, if that's what's best for you, that's to be trusted, because that's going within and connecting with the true, complete, whole soul that you really, really are.
Let me ask you just a couple more questions before we wrap up our program here. Who inspires you?
Oh, God. Do you know, everyone. I mean, I'm just, and not that this is right for everyone, but since I was young, I've always studied with a teacher, so I very much had a master. And when I was young, I would look up to them and I would think, my goodness, I want to really be like you. Which was kind of the ironic thing, because they were trying to teach me that I had to just be like me, and there was no difference between us. And the second that I started to grasp that, I moved away from just loving the communion between me and my teacher and the love that flowed effortlessly and seeing it with everyone. And sometimes I can just go round to a friend's house and just see them, or they'll just be kind and loving, and that inspires me more than anything, because I know that's the real them. So I guess when people are being authentic within themselves, that really inspires me, because it reminds me I can be that within myself. So when people are rushing around trying to be more than what they already are, that doesn't inspire me. Mm-hmm. And I guess people seeking power, and that doesn't inspire me. But people who are willing to just be themselves and say, you know what, this is actually just who I am, that really does, yeah, that's, for me, that's pretty much the most inspiring thing I can ever see. Doesn't matter if it's someone busking on the street singing a song, if you can see in their eyes and listen to the sound of their voice and it's coming from a place of truth, I'll stand there and listen to it. So it really is important to me, yeah.
Who is Nicola Phoenix?
Well, if you would have asked me this question 10 years ago, I would have labeled off all the things I do. I am this and I do that, and this is my label and this is my clinic and this is all this, and oh, and I do this for a living and I fly around here talking to people. But the only way I can honestly describe today is the same as everybody else, which is somebody who has different days, but is yet working towards that connection within myself more and more. And the times that I find that connection, I can only describe it as pure joy. And the times that I don't, because that is the journey of my life at the moment, I'm not here going, oh, I'm there all the time, then I'm learning to laugh at myself a lot more at the insanity, and I like using the word insanity, that I can cause myself in those moments. Mm-hmm. And that's really who I am. It's just that same as everybody else, learning and loving and growing and moving ever closer towards living more moments, because that's where I am now in my journey, not every moment, but much more moments of being completely authentic.
And finally, what do you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing?
Gosh, that's such a funny question, because, again, and I'll give you both, if you asked me this a long time ago, it would be to really help people through my teachings and my books and all sorts of stuff. And the only answer that I can give you today, which is probably the most truthful answer I could probably ever give, is just to love, because the person that I am, it flows effortlessly through me. And if I can be that and show people that, then that's enough to make a contribution. So it sounds like I do less, but what I've learned is by just simply being that loving person, I get to help a lot more people, because I show them what's possible. Mm. And I show them what's possible beyond restrictions in their lives, because I'll tell them about restrictions, so to speak, that I thought I had in mind.
NicolaPhoenix.com is the website. The Spiritual Psychologist. She is a psychologist, a yoga teacher, author, and speaker, and her book, Reclaiming Happiness, 8 Strategies for an Authentic Life and Greater Peace. And Nicola, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Bless you. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
And for those of you who are not able to stick around beyond the end of the radio program, there is more of this interview. And for those of you listening on A to Zen, there is more of this interview. And you can go to richarddugan.com and you can hear the entirety of this over 1 hour interview with Nicola Phoenix. And again, her book is entitled Reclaiming Happiness, 8 Strategies for an Authentic Life and Greater Peace. Once again, Nicola, thank you so much for joining us. I'm Richard Dugan, and I thank you for joining us. Until next Saturday at 3 p.m. Pacific time, love to Lal.